Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the happier happy hour. Dom, I'm happy. We've been joined by a live guest via Zoom. He is James Santel, former U.S. attorney, our good friend. He hosts Morning Cannolis on Saturday mornings around here. We appreciate you doing that, Jim. But mostly, we appreciate you coming around to talk about the January 6th and the new U.S. Supreme Court slapdown of the former president. Lots of good stuff going on today, Jim.
Lots of things happening in our nation's capital, plenty of the place to be. If you can't be in Wisconsin, be in Washington, D.C.
Well, and a 6 o'clock U.S. senatorial debate, a couple of guys want to go to D.C. We got the insurrectionist, the incumbent, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, and Mandela Barnes, our recent guest. That happens at 6 o'clock. We'll take you up until that time. We won't broadcast it here, but you can find it on C-SPAN. But Jim, let's talk about the January 6th, the civic media broadcast that today, all of the coverage, gavel to gavel. And I heard some damning testimony in the court of public opinion. Donald Trump is guilty.
That certainly is their continuing message, is it not? And I would say that even though in the past, in the previous hearings, including the very first one with those very compelling testimonies of the officers, they've always talked generally about Donald Trump's involvement. Today was the focus on him, not exclusively, but he was the target of it. He was undeniably the focus of this. And again, not just compelling television, but compelling testimony. To the extent that your listeners can absorb this evening or some other time, only 1 hour of the programming, it's worth it to watch it again on television. The second hour in particular found just stunning and stirring. As you see once again, I think it was not previously shown, video of the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the Senate Majority Leader, cowered in this place off of the Capitol location, obviously secured, and reaching out to the governor of Virginia, reaching out to the mayor of the District of Columbia, trying to get some help. Who is not engaged? The President of the United States of America. And another point made today, what is he doing? He's up at the White House back after the Ellipse event, and he's watching all this on television, not responding to any of the entreaties being made to him by everybody around him. Do something, Mr. President, call this off. And he's doing nothing. And stirring television, stirring images. And again, a stunning indictment of him today. Very well done by this committee, as they've done before.
Well, Liz Cheney especially laid it out like a prosecutor from the very top. Jim, a couple of the notes I took. He was personally and substantially involved in the premeditated plan. It was a premeditated plan. Then they laid out the evidence, Jim. Then they gave us specific examples of why the president, he was premeditating this plan since July of 2020. And they talked about a Fitton memo, effectively declare victory on the night of the election. This was put forth on, I guess it was Halloween of 2020, the Fitton memo. But effectively, he's going to go declare victory because the early votes, the first votes counted would be the voters, the Trump voters probably, that voted on election day, and the absentee ballots were to be ignored and excluded according to this plan, as I understood it, Jim. But effectively what they did is they laid out the case. This was a premeditated crime.
Absolutely. And again, we've known that in broad strokes previously, but going back, Liz Cheney was so very good, as was all of the supporting video behind her statements. Going back and talking about the fact this wasn't just people waking up even days before January 6th and saying, gee, maybe we can get some people to come to Washington. This was a concerted plan that, as you say, went back to weeks before the election, certainly on election day, post-election day, really ramps up. We've got plainly the John Eastman memorandum that also codifies this absolutely, positively illegal plan through false electors, through the vice president's involvement on Capitol Hill, all of this, a very concerted plan. This was, and placing Donald Trump right at the center of that, not only in discussions with him about that, but being the one who is orchestrating this in many, many different ways, including summoning the mob, as she once again said, to Washington, D.C. on January 6th. Very, very compelling. And then talking as well about other people in Congress saying, you know what, he's got to be held accountable. We can't continue to not hold him accountable. And oh, by the way, if you do that, if you fail to acknowledge the president's involvement in this, you too are complicit in this, and you make it normal and you make it acceptable to do this kind of thing. She said, that's what brings the republic to an end. Don't do that. We can't have that. We've got to push back on this man and bring him to an end.
Jim, the other very compelling part of the testimony, at least that caught my attention, Adam Kinzinger laid out the fact that the directive, the immediate withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan and Somalia, was signed by the president on November 11, 2020. And the immediacy was supposed to be before the inauguration day of his successor, Joe Biden. And it was signed on November 11, 2020. It reinforced to me the premeditation and the fact that everything that happened after that point was part of the coup attempt, Jim.
Absolutely. Again, as we know, Joe Biden's withdrawal in August of last year, not at all an easy thing. I think most people regard it as an unsuccessful attempt, successful in the end accomplishing it, but very, very badly handled. Very, very difficult to do. Donald Trump says, or was going to say, go ahead and do this, bring that to an end. Interestingly, after August of last year, he says, well, that would never would have happened on my watch. Plainly, that was in part the plan of his and of other people around him, anticipating, again, the complete demise, if you will, of government operations. Thankfully, we had some thoughtful people right around him who stopped that from happening. This once again goes to this issue of who is in charge when you have someone who is plainly engaging in such reckless activity, doing things that are plainly not in the best interests of the government, not in the best interest, most importantly, of the nation itself, all of us. And he is reckless. He doesn't care. And that's the other implicit thing that Adam Kinzinger and all of that testimony was all about. He didn't care about America. He didn't care about Afghanistan. He just cared about disruption. And that's what he was trying to accomplish.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours. Jim, thanks for coming around once again. I want to get your sense as a former U.S. attorney. The FBI and the Secret Service, apparently there was some knowledge of, you know, something could happen, that some people are going to come to the Capitol that are armed, and some banter back and forth about that. Yet we seem wholly unprepared. I mean, for 3 hours, the president did nothing while his supporters attacked the Capitol. And I think it was either Speaker Pelosi or perhaps it was Schumer wondering, hey, Pentagon, if this was your building getting attacked, would you have done something by now? Hey, if this was the White House getting attacked, would something have been done by now? It's hard to imagine, but seemingly some people at the FBI, again, we know that some text messages have been lost forever, ironically. Had some wind of what was going down, but apparently didn't do anything about it. Jim, what was your sense?
I think this is a very good thing for us to look at, maybe not at the top of the list, but maybe in a secondary posture, because this was, and I think most people are looking at this as a failure of intelligence. We plainly had a lot of indication long before, even 10 days before this event, that there was something brewing. This is coming up. Obviously, the president already summoning through his tweet in December, come to Washington, it's going to be wild. But we know from today's testimony and today's information that 10 days before this, we had fairly clear confirmation inside the FBI, inside the Secret Service, inside Homeland Security, that this was not just a convocation of people. This was dangerous. This was dangerous. And the point of that information was people coming armed, people are going to plan to kill people. and a failure of information and intelligence exchange to ready themselves and ready the capital for that, and finding ourselves flat-footed, almost flat-footed, when all this happens. Certainly responding much too late on January 6th, but should have been there long before that. I think it's fair to say that the director of the FBI should be questioned about this. There should be inquiries about that. The Secret Service, putting aside the text messages that may or may not still be out there, all of this. What did we know? What about this 10 days before we knew that this, how dangerous this was? What did we do? It certainly seems today, and I remember this from my Iraq situation, when we had information about things happening in the green zone, outside the green zone, in Baghdad, other places around the country. You prepare for that based upon the worst case scenario. Did we do that here? And if not, again, what can we do? What can we learn from the future so we don't do this again?
Well, they were either complicit or in some ways, you know, maybe it's not great, but you know, we don't condone the violence, but we can certainly understand how they feel. I mean, that's a terrible. And the other thing about it, also, Christopher Miller, who was the acting Secretary of Defense, right, installed November 9th after the election, puts out a memo about how the Trump supporters / insurrectionist bastards are to be dealt with. And then a 3-hour gap of any. I mean, there's so much to go down on this. They put the subpoena out. They're going to for Trump. What do you think the chances are he actually shows up?
Very little. As you can fully end. I mean, this is a good thing. This is a good way to end. It certainly was wonderful theater. But plainly, he's going to run into court once again, as he always does, and delay and delay and delay. And so unlikely that he's going to be appearing at any time before this committee expires at the end of this year, before it issues its report. But significant to do that, and significant to the point of that, of course, underscoring this notion that everybody has said, we won't testify, we're taking the Fifth Amendment when it comes to things we said with Donald Trump, to Donald Trump. Therefore, Donald Trump is the only additional source of that information. We need to get him in. A point well made, even if the likelihood of his appearing there is virtually none at all.
Well, I'd rather he appear in a court of law, perhaps a federal courthouse at some point, or at least in front of a grand jury. There are so many cases, the Mar-a-Lago, the paperwork crimes. I'd like to talk to you about that, Jim. And other topics, we got the finest of guests. He is James Santel, former U.S. attorney, and more importantly, host of Morning Cannolis right here on the Civic Media Network, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11. You know, he'll be doing all sorts of in-depth legal coverage. But we got him right now. Come on back. More Devil's Advocates rolling through the Happier Happy Hour, the Thursday J6 pre-debate edition.
What did we do wrong? We did nothing wrong.
You serious, Clark?
You did it! You did it!
No, sir. I didn't like it.
I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for those meddling Devil's Advocates.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. If you miss any of this fine program, go to civicmedia.us. Look up the Devil's Advocates for podcasts and interviews.
Dominic, why would they miss any of it? We got the finest of guests up around here, including James Santel, our current guest, live via Zoom. Jim is a former U.S. attorney, still a practicing attorney, I suspect. And also the host of Morning Cannolis right here on the Civic Media Network. Tune in Saturday mornings, 9 to 11, live in almost every market across the state. Jim, appreciate you making some time for us today. Now, the January 6th is certainly captivating. And this crime against the nation, against democracy, is certainly the one that is most troubling to me. But I'm starting to fall into line on these paperwork crimes, the Mar-a-Lago stuff. I heard George Conway, the I guess he was considered to be the Solicitor General of the United States under Trump, Conway, Kellyanne's, you know, Mr. Kellyanne Conway. Now he's sort of a never-Trumper, but he said the easiest and straightest line between Donald Trump and a jail cell is probably the Espionage Act and, you know, what's already in the public record. I mean, guilty, right, Counselor? We can't hear Jim. Are you muted, Jim, or do we need to turn Jim on?
Maybe we need to.
Yeah, there
you
go.
All right, all right. Okay,
did we turn you on, Jim?
Okay, good, good.
That's what we're good
I'm going to leave that completely alone and move quickly on to George Conway, who, yes, was under consideration for a while to be either the civil division chief or the solicitor general, someone who a position that ultimately went to people like Clark, Jeffrey Clark, who we also know from this entire scenario. But absolutely right. So we're now. Back in the time of the Mar-a-Lago appeals, we know the Supreme Court has come back with this one sentence rebuke today and basically said the application of the president, former president, to stay the decision of the Court of Appeals is hereby denied. That brings all of that to a very quick and fast end. That's a good thing. The 11th Circuit obviously now still has the appeal from the Department of Justice on the so-called paper case that you're now advocating much more for, which is a good thing as well. And the important news there is that they're also expediting. It may not sound like it, but they've established a briefing schedule that contemplates that the parties are going to submit briefs in November, probably oral arguments shortly after that. That's pretty fast for an appeals court. They've acted quickly before. And the hope is between the Supreme Court case now, hopefully completely resolved, the government still can go ahead now with the 100 or so classified documents to look at those. Hopefully the 11th Circuit will look at all this and say, you know, Judge Cannon, you issued this order in early September. All of that restricting access to the remaining 11,000 documents, that is review, investigative review by the Department of Justice, that's got to be overturned too. And hopefully bringing that to an end by the end of this year so that we can stop talking about what should be now an investigation of that completely. Meantime, Judge Deary is still going on as a special master. He's still issuing orders and reviewing documents there, as he has been told to do. But lots of moving parts in this. This is good news today for America, bad news for Donald Trump, a clear rebuke by the United States Supreme Court.
Jim, the Washington Post is reporting that a Trump employee has told federal agents about moving boxes of documents at Mar-a-Lago at the specific direction of the former president. And that, combined with the security camera footage, offers, as they claim, key evidence of Donald Trump's behavior as investigators sought the return of classified material. Key evidence of Donald Trump's behavior. What does that tell you about Donald Trump's behavior if he's asking, apparently now, a Trump employee to move boxes from where they were to his personal residence, I believe, after receiving the subpoena for the documents and all the hubbaloo about that. What does it say about his behavior, in your opinion, Counselor?
Well, the most important thing, your question rightly focuses on, it's intent, right? You're not directing. First of all, you know the documents are there. You can't deny that they're in your presence. You're directing, apparently, this fellow named Walt Nauta, N-A-U-T-A, a former military aide, left the White House to join the former president back at Mar-a-Lago. As I read this story and consume it, I also wonder aloud if this fellow and many others are a part of the great portion of the affidavit that was redacted. We know that there are an awful lot of people there who were at Mar-a-Lago who plainly had to tell the FBI, as this fellow plainly did, not only about movements of these documents from one place to another, but also about what they are. And we've got pages and pages of that 32-page affidavit from early August, presumably describing what he and others said. It is compelling. This is, I think, a little bit of that, but it gives you a real clear indication of the specificity of what the FBI knows about what happened, and plainly puts Donald Trump right in the middle of this. Not just the documents in his desk, but now he's directing people to move things around. Just more evidence to indict him quite literally for possession of not only presidential records, but classified records as well, under at least those three statutes that the magistrate judge identified.
And obstruction.
Obstruction, absolutely, absolutely. And that's, we forget that sometimes. That was also dropped in one of the early paragraphs of the affidavit, the portion that was not redacted. I suspect as well, a lot of that redacted information talks about all of the obstruction. We know about the initial request. We know about the subpoena that was issued that was not complied with fully, the certification by the attorney that everything has been produced. Finally, the search warrant. The fact that they mention obstruction means not just those kinds of things. What other things were done, whether they involved moving documents from one place to another to avoid discovery, or other things simply to stop the legitimate investigation of where these documents are. We know as late as last week, early this week, that NARA continues to say, you know what, we still don't have everything. And so it just goes on and on and on.
Jim, do you see the reporting that Trump wanted to, you know, trade some of these docs for maybe proof that exonerated him in the Russia thing? That seemed quite troubling as well. A little quid pro quo, sir.
Right. Quid pro quo. How do you even quantify that? Where do you even begin to understand the criminality of that? I'm going to bargain away classified documents in the national interest to get more information about an investigator. It's just wild. And it really does need to be the subject of an indictment soon, along with other things out there.
Well, maybe these paperwork crimes have teeth. James Santel, former U.S. attorney and the host of the greatest morning show in civic media history, Morning Cannolis, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11. Jim, thanks for coming by today.
Always a pleasure. Important day.
Thank you,
yes,
Jim.
Yes, sir, it is. And a big debate coming up at 6. We'll take you up to it. Your phone calls could be next. 844-96-PARTY.
Kicking ass and taking names since the Wisconsin uprising. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday Happier Happy Hour. Going to the phones next at 844-967-2789. And if you're new to this program, we, you know, lightly screen the calls, take most, if not all. We're going to take you up to the U.S. senatorial debate that goes off at 6 o'clock. You'll have to find it at a different outlet, but we're going to watch it. Dom and I, are we going to live stream it for the audience, Dom?
I don't know about that. I guess
we could
totally
do that.
Could, yeah.
We could give our Mystery Science Theater 3000 non-FCC regulated commentary. So if you've never liked the Devil's Advocates Facebook page, today's your day, folks. We're gonna live moderate the debate as only we can, but can't play it out on the radio. Tomorrow night, we're going to play out the gubernatorial debate. We hope you tune in on civic media. Governor Tony Evers against the two-time loser, Tim Michaels, that guy from Connecticut. 844-967-2789. A few new names here in the queue, Dom. Let's take Norman from Orfordville. Norman, welcome. What do you got for us?
Hi, Norman.
Well, hey. That's Stormin' Norman, to be correct.
Oh, nice. Stormin' Norman.
All right. Yeah.
Hey, the January 6th hearing today was just absolutely fascinating. But what I'm going to urge everybody to do is contact Merrick Garland and tell him that the January 6th committee did their job. Now he has to do his.
Norman, I completely agree with you. Merrick Garland, when he has spoken in public, continues to say, every time he's asked the question, continues to say no man is above the law, including the former president. That, to me, is a continuous tell that he intends to indict, be it on the quote-unquote paperwork crimes to Mar-a-Lago, because that's moved beyond paperwork crimes to, you know, perhaps espionage and treason on high level. And also, of course, the January 6th and maybe the tax evasion and the state crimes in the state of Georgia. And then there's also the civil stuff going on in New York State, Norman. Kind of keeps a radio show host busy.
Well, the contact information is available out there on the internet. So I put a call in to their telephone number there. I couldn't get through on that. But I was able to leave a message. And, of course, there's a mail address. So I also sent a letter. And I urge everybody else to do the same thing.
But, Norman,
we gotta get that
normally,
moving.
Normally I'm all down for civic engagement. But I don't want the American people or the president or anyone else calling the Department of Justice and trying to influence the outcome of a prosecution. I think the only thing that should dictate that is the evidence. Don't you think, Norman? I mean, I want it bad, yep, too, man. I'm Veruca Salt over here. I want it now, Daddy.
Well, Storm and Norman, we could send a letter or give a message saying, hey, here is the evidence. Maybe you should follow it. Thank you very much for your service, Storm and Norman.
And Norman, if you do, yep, leave a message for him, tell him the Devil's Advocates will declare it Merrick Garland Day up in here for the entire day. Hell, we'll give him the whole week.
Good for you.
Norman, thank you for listening. Norman from Orford. Orfordville. Got to make sure I keep remembering the all the fine communities all across the great state of Wisconsin. You can hear us all over. Hell, man, worldwide on the Civic Media app. And don't forget, we're going to live stream the U.S. Senate debate from Wisconsin. Dom and I guess we just made this plan. So like the Facebook page so you can be a part. We're going back to the phones. Marguerite or Margaret? Cottage Grove, what do you prefer?
Margaret.
Margaret.
Hey, Margaret.
Welcome. What do you got for us?
I called a couple of weeks ago and inquired as to whether the DOJ was going to be able to investigate the video of the dock or the boxes that were outside the helicopter, outside the White House, that then Trump got into and went to Bedminster.
Yeah.
I was wondering if today's Supreme Court decision was going to open that path.
Well, I'm not sure that the Supreme Court decision opens it, but it expedites and allows the investigation to move forward with alacrity, we would hope, Margaret.
Okay.
And what I would say is you make a very valid point, and I think some of that we discussed with Jim Santel. When there is credible reporting in the Washington Post that there was a Trump subordinate that was directed by the former president to move the documents before the DOJ could come seize them, well, I think there might be a few more, let's just say, search warrants and pre-dawn paramilitary raids, maybe one at Trump Tower, one at Bedminster. I think they need to dig up Ivana's grave, and I think I'd be checking Eric Trump's garage as well.
I could not agree more.
Margaret, we appreciate you listening and contributing. You know, the show's always better with audience contributions. Dom, at eight, most of them, you know, some push their luck around here.
It's talk radio. You're supposed to call in and talk 844-967-2789.
But have a point. It makes it so much easier
or at least
on the listener.
And if you can scrounge one up, get to it quickly.
Yes.
844-96-PARTY. Bill from Oconomowoc, you are up. Welcome, Bill. What do you got?
Say, good evening. I got a million-dollar question. You guys are more into politics than anybody I know. Give me the odds of Trump being incarcerated.
I would say it's a coin flip. It's about 50-50. If you talk about actually the man ever spending a day behind what we would call a jail cell, I could see a circumstance where he was exiled sort of Napoleonically to Mar-a-Lago, some sort of home arrest.
What?
But to see this guy in club bed, you know, living with the inmates, I find it hard to believe just because of the security circumstance.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Bill, I'm going to give you 88.9%. That's what I'm giving you, man. Coin flip.
Better 92.7.
Kind of percentage. I'd like to bet on that, but here's what I believe is going to happen. He's going to get a slap on the hand. The slap's going to mean absolutely nothing. He'll be right into politics because he said, we're running illegal politics, and this will perpetuate itself till the guy leaves this earth.
Bill, from your own assessment, though, whether or not he actually spends time behind jail cell, you know, behind bars, if he is convicted of crimes of this sort, he will be excluded from the presidency going forward.
But don't you think he will still run for it and call everything else illegal?
Well, he's running for it effectively. As soon as the midterms, he's going to run for president in 30 days, but he will not be eligible to serve upon conviction, is my understanding.
That's not very much of a penalty, thanks for the call, Bill, for inciting an insurrection, a coup, a revolution against this country, man. There's got to be more to it than that. Not being able to run, because of course, Donald Trump, I'm going to run anyway. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there has to be a consequence for insurrection greater than you don't get to get on the ballot because a guy will say I'm on the ballot anyway. And if you don't let me on the ballot, then I'm coming down to my local clerk of courts or I'm coming down to local wards and me and my crew. We're going to in all 50 states. Yes. He had how many tens of thousands of mega nut jobs at the Capitol? You don't think they can do that separately in all 50 states? I mean, do the math on the radio, man. It can absolutely be done. The only way The only way to snuff this thing out, to put a cigarette out on Trump's ass, is to put his ass in jail for the crimes he committed.
Sure, I'm all down for that. I'm just saying I think it's mathematically less probable than a conviction that doesn't actually include any time behind behind bars.
Well, which conviction? What's, bring any of the one of the six we're talking about.
I think there would be a convicted compromise, but no time soon. I think the Department of Justice may charge Trump. Obviously, I think as George Conway said, and I repeated earlier today, the straightest line between Donald Trump and quote unquote a jail cell is probably the Mar-a-Lago stuff, the classified documents, etc. But I think when the actual rubber hits the road, the prosecution goes down. I am less clear due to the nonviolent nature and the first offense status of the defendant that he would end up in a club fed. I can't see him there for quote unquote paperwork crimes. What I do think, because I don't think that would be construed to be, you know, he's not a harm to others. He no longer has access to classified
documents. If one of the
Sergeys
has a file that he took, is that become a problem?
Well, that starts bleeding into, let's say, treason or
traitorous. Well, what do you think? Come on, man. The guy took super secret documents, lied about it, had his employees move it when it found out, on top of the, hey, I need 11,780 votes.
Well, that's a different issue.
Well, but look at these things. These are terrible. Every single one of them should put someone in jail for 10 freaking years. If it was you or me, you know it would, man. We have an obligation. If the evidence shows that the man did the crime, prosecutions must come. Because if they don't, why the hell wouldn't I do the crime?
Well, because you don't have access to classified documents. And
consequence
no one...
to it. Look what happened to the people who actually had access to classified documents, man.
You mean the other people, the non-presidential people?
Yes.
Well,
there has to be consistency, man. There's no democracy if a guy like Trump gets away with all these things forever and ever, and guys like you and me will go to jail for the same thing, man. That's not equal justice under law under any circumstance.
Okay. Trump will be convicted, I think, of crimes. I think Trump will be excluded from the ballot ultimately. Whether or not that happens in a timely fashion to exclude him from the ballot in 2024, I don't know. But as former Speaker Paul Ryan from the great state of Wisconsin said today, something to the effect, I paraphrase, you know, the stink will be palpable upon Trump by 2024. He is a loser. This party must move on from this frickin' loser, right? Now, Paul Ryan's been very meek in his moving on, you know, retired quietly to cash big checks. But, the electoral outcome, yeah, Trump's not going to win the presidency. I never claimed he would. I just thought he'd run. But the actual, you know, outcome of jail, I think, should be the logical result after the J6 hearing we heard today, Dom, the premeditation. I mean, they laid out a prosecution in public today. We played it on the radio. That's what the man should go to jail for. I'm just not sure if all you have to do is effectively, and he's got a big megaphone, you can tamper with the jury pool. All you can do is say, it's rigged, it's rigged, it's rigged. It's a witch hunt. And all you got to do is convince one of the jurors to basically do the old OJ thing and jury nullify and not vote to convict. So, if you have a pleadable case that makes the man a criminal and excludes him from the ballot in the future, you may see a compromise made by a guy like Merrick Garland to take the best outcome you can get provably, you know, take the bird in hand. That's my fear.
844-967-2789. Dick from Madison, you're up. What's your fear, Dick?
Spiders.
Well, real quickly, almost any glove will fit. But we get beyond that. You know, today, with what came out in the January 6th, you're going to tell me, and I totally advocate that he should be in prison, that he can do the things he did treasonously and all of this. And Martha Stewart, for supposed insider trading, actually goes to prison?
Paper monetary crimes. Yes.
Yeah. And then real quickly, one last thing to CJ. I guess this means today, after what we saw, that cut and run, it really wasn't cut and run, was it? When on November 11th of 2020, he wanted to pull out of these places?
Wanted to pull out. He signed a directive. Trump ordered the code red. Trump basically set the table for the Taliban to come charging across the country and force Joe Biden. So anyways, appreciate your call, Dick. Appreciate all the people. My only fear is when Dick invokes CJ's name on a debate night, CJ's going to demand time to respond. But we ain't giving it to you. Probably not, CJ. But, you know, try. 844-967-2789. U.S. Senatorial debate at 6 o'clock tonight. We'll C-SPAN it and maybe watch on the live stream. Insurrectionist Ron Johnson against Mandela Barnes. But more Devil's Advocates. Come on back.
Lock him up. Lock up the sun. Don't forget about the sun.
Right to jail. Right away.
The Devil's Advocates, rock and roll political commentary in a top 40 world.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show, last segment of the day. So if you got something to say, hit us up right now. Toll free, 844-967-2789.
Dominic, I know there's an update on Robin Voss and his battle with the January 6th committee. Before you get to that, I want to point out Daniel Bice. What a hack. What are you doing, Dan?
Wow, come on.
He is hammering.
That's pretty rude, man. Come on.
How is it newsworthy that Mandela Barnes did media interviews with Russia Today in 2015-2016? But Ron Johnson's own trip to Russia on July 4th of 2018, and Ron Johnson's, inability to stop Russian misinformation? Hell, the FBI called Ron and said, you are a dupe of Russia. You are propagating Russia misinformation. And Daniel Bice, the day of the final U.S. senatorial debate, is going to hammer Mandela Barnes for doing like three interviews denouncing U.S. police actions, you know, like when they kill a black guy or something like that. How dare he go on? I mean, at that time, Russia Today, RT, was a credible news source. I mean, Ed Schultz had a show, man, on Russia Today. Tom Hartman played out on Russia Today. You know, these are hardly... Well, you know, again, the righties,
yeah, the
would
righties,
call us,
man,
communist Marxists.
Remember who you're talking about, man.
But if we're communist Marxist guys like us, Tom, I would point out Ron Johnson did 26 long-form interviews on this fine program, and I never even been to Moscow, but Ron has.
844-967-2789. Well, Bice's newspaper, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Molly Beck, she has an article out. Let's get to that briefly. The title, Robin Voss and the House January 6th Select Committee battling in court over a subpoena for the Assembly Speaker's testimony. Of course, the Voss was subpoenaed in September. Now Voss is asking a federal judge to throw out the committee subpoena.
Nope.
A request the committee argued should be outweighed by public interest. The attorneys for the U.S. House's Office of General Counsel wrote, "It is difficult to imagine in a congressional investigation of greater national and constitutional significance." Both parties are scheduled to meet in federal court later this month before U.S. District Judge Pamela Pepper in the Eastern District of Wisconsin. Bumping down in this article, Voss, he argues that a recent discussion with Trump is not within the scope of the committee. The committee argues Voss's discussions are key to understanding Trump's effort to, quote, undermine the peaceful transfer of power following the 2020 presidential election. And again, as I mentioned earlier in the show, this pressure continues, as evidenced by Trump's endorsement of Speaker Voss's primary opponent, who is now engaged in a write-in campaign still against Robin Voss. The committee is to investigate the events of January 6th, the events that led up to and caused January 6th, and the impact of these events on the peaceful transfer of power in January of 2021, Voss's attorney wrote. The requested testimony, in contrast, is solely about a request Speaker Voss allegedly received, in July of 2022, pertaining to the proposed legislative action in the wake of a July 2022 Wisconsin Supreme Court decision. Voss has talked about his conversations with Trump to news reporters, prompting the committee's interest, according to the filings. He is hiring and firing of former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman to review the 2020 election were also used as a basis for the subpoena, according to the court filings. These conversations are not only examples of Speaker Voss's entanglement in President Trump's campaign to decertify the 2020 presidential election results. In June 2021, reportedly under pressure from the former president, Speaker Voss hired former Wisconsin's corrupted Supreme Court justice to, quote-unquote, audit the state's 2020 results. The subsequent 14-month investigation turned up no significant evidence of fraud, cost the state over $1 million, and concluded when Speaker Voss fired the man he'd put in charge, calling him an embarrassment to the state.
844. Corrupted Supreme Court Justice, former Michael Gableman.
Yes, thank you, thank you.
844-967-2789. Before we get to the phones, I want to point out, Tom, while you and I watch the U.S. Senate debate, we do have some fine, less political programming going on the Civic Media Network. We've got the Native Roots Radio between 6 and 7. So that's while the debate's going on, our pal Robert Pilot and company, they'll be broadcasting. And then at 7 o'clock across the network, originating from Waukesha, we got our buddy Joel Clayfish. He's rebranded it. It's now Raised in the Wisco, and that goes off at 7 o'clock. And here originating from the Devil Radio Studios, the Solidarity Realty Studios, technically, Empowered Caregivers with Liza Helen Brand and Kristen Voss. Enjoy one of those two fine shows, please. And Dom and I will be, you know, caboozling and watching the U.S. senatorial debate between the alleged insurrectionist Ron Johnson.
Alleged.
And Mandela Barnes. He's not convicted yet. Terry from Minneapolis. Welcome, Terry. What do you got for us?
Hey, Terry.
Hi, guys. Well, first of all, let me say congratulations on your show. I listen to it every day. You guys are a breath of fresh air.
Thanks, Terry.
You're quite welcome. Now, and I'm glad to see you expanding in Wisconsin. That's what we need. We need somebody like you in Minnesota to do the same thing. But I want to say I agree with Tom.
Sorry, Terry, I'm losing you. No, but please continue.
No, I agree with Tom in the fact that if one of us would do even one of the things that Trump has been accused of, we'd be in jail. And the way I look at it is the January 6th committee is an official committee of the United States Congress. They are going to subpoena him. If he refuses to answer the subpoena, if it was you or I, we would be arrested and thrown in jail until we did.
We'd get the Steve Bannon treatment. And I think they do have an enforceable subpoena upon the former president. I think he can be compelled.
Right. And he is. And the thing you got to look at, yes, he is an ex-president, but he is now a private citizen. He has to live by the same laws we do.
Yes, sir.
And that's all I'm going to say. But you guys keep up the good work. I listen to you every day. I'm a big fan.
Terry, appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, Terry.
Let's try to sneak one or two more in quickly. Wisco Paul, say hi.
Hi. Did today's hearings move the needle at all for independent voters?
I hope for independent voters. Yes.
Yes.
Pizza Box Mike, give you like 30, my good ranting buddy.
Well, I'm high and ready to watch that on C-SPAN.
Mandela Barnes is black.
I'm Ron Johnson, and I approve that message.
Pizza Box, if you were to smoke on any particular statement or drink, you know, like a drinking game, but smoking, what would be the trigger word?
Just send it back to the states where it's illegal to smoke, so how appropriate.
Appreciate your contribution, Pizza Box Mike. He's got his own fine show, Outside the Pizza Box, every Saturday at noon right here on the Civic Media Network, originating from Madison. Don't forget, U.S. Senate debate at 6. We cannot broadcast it, but we are broadcasting tomorrow night's big event, the gubernatorial debate between Evers and Michaels. Thank you, James Santel. Don't forget, extended Devil's Advocates tomorrow. Set your clock. Stick around. 3 hours plus a debate.
$1 million.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Yeah!
I...